Thank you.
And with that, we are going to move to 18, upland game bird forecast and fall forecast.
Good morning, Commission. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
All right. Well, it's nice to speak virtually with everybody again today. If we want to get my presentation up, I will be talking about our wild bird harvest for pheasants and then prairie grouse season, and then give you a little bit of taste of what we hope to expect this fall. Awesome. So again, thank you very much for having me. Alex Holm, Senior Wildlife Biologist, located out of Huron Office.
What's your name?
C-O-R-K-I-N-F.
Okay. All right. I'll restart here. Alex Holm, Senior Wildlife Biologist, located out of the Huron Office. I'm here again to present some upland game update. I want to put a shameless plug out there for these kiddos. This was a opening day pick. We had a great time. That handsome man that's kneeling in the lower right hand corner of it is my pride and joy. He is my go-to hunting partner, and that's actually his, at 10 years old, it's his sixth opening day. So pretty proud of that. I kind of hope the condition or the tradition holds strong, and we can, you know, kind of continue that. All right, so just a little preview of what the season actually holds. Our prairie grouse season starts earlier than our pheasant season. It starts in September 21st, on that is the opening weekend, and then it runs all the way to January 31st. I'll remind the commission that last year was the first year that we actually extended the season. It used to end that first week, or that after, like, the first weekend in January, but, you know, we changed it to coincide with pheasant season to provide more opportunity for hunting prairie grouse while you're on the landscape where both these species kind of overlap. So we're talking maybe that central part of South Dakota, even the, you know, far eastern half of eastern South Dakota, or far western half of eastern South Dakota, excuse me. Our pheasant season ran from October 19th and then again went to January 31st. We've had this season date for approximately 4 to 5 years now, and it just gives our residents and non-residents alike an opportunity just to have some extended harvest. You know, both these species, again, are a little different than the sage grouse that I talked to you folks about last year. They're very strike as the iron is hot type species, so we see these, you know, larger boom and busts in the population due to kind of weather, which I'll allude to at the end of the presentation. So as well as with pheasants taking only males out of the population, we're not going to hamper our production at all, because roosters can mate with up to 15 hens, and the population can still do just fine. So taking the surplus amount of roosters out in that month of January really has no impact on the population itself. It's more of a human dimension aspect. One of the cool things that we do put out for these upland seasons is our upland outlook. We go into hunting conditions, reports from the field, what folks are seeing for broods on the landscape, how the cover looks. We do season reminders on potential rule changes, bag limits, dates, license types, license costs, all this sort of information that we either mail out to folks or we do put out as a press release so folks can read it and then kind of plan their trip accordingly. From there, a lot of folks, especially non-residents, they'll contact COs and myself, narrow down a location in South Dakota that they, you know, either can try to harvest both species or focus more on pheasants.
Did we lose you, Alex?
No, can you hear me?
Oh, yep, we can now.
Wait, oh, I'm sorry, just waiting for the slide to advance.
Oh,
you're good. So we'll get right into it. Pheasant harvest, we had a phenomenal year. Talking with non-residents, calling in the office, kind of prepping them for the hunt, giving them locations, and then actually getting calls back from them after their 10-day hunting light, or two five-day hunting periods actually concluded. They had, you know, they just had phenomenal reports saying all the birds that they're seeing, the cover that they had. Our total pheasant harvest was actually 1.31 million roosters. This pheasant harvest and the grouse harvest estimates to come actually come from a subsample of 15,000 resident and non-resident license holders. So what we do is we'll actually take 15,000 of each of those groups of licensed residents and non-residents, and then we'll mail them or email them a survey. Well, they'll indicate how many birds they harvest, what counties they were in, dates, all that sort of stuff, so we can get that sort of information. Again, I can't stress enough how good last season actually was. Being a pheasant hunter myself, I mean, bird numbers were phenomenal, and it really showed in our pheasant harvest. We actually increased our harvest from last year about 5.5%, which is awesome. Again, residents and non-residents alike, they just kept commenting on how it was, you know, it seems like the good old days, you know, it seems like the good old days. And, you know, it really kind of reminds me of the times when I was a younger kid coming out to South Dakota and hunting as well, seeing those types of bird numbers out there and the opportunity to harvest these. For total pheasant hunters, we had approximately 140,000 pheasant hunters, which was up 3.6%. One of the cool things is we actually gained a little in our resident hunt.
Our resident. None of my keyboard is working.
We actually gained numbers in our resident small game license or our small game resident license numbers, which is kind of bucking the trend after the last few years. So to see people either reactivating or new hunters coming in to chase roosters is always a good thing. In non-residents, we also increased up to a little over 82,000. This was a good 5% increase from last year's numbers. One of the cool facts with our pheasant harvest is in October when that season started. So you're basically talking about the first 2 weeks of our pheasant season. We harvested more birds in 2 weeks in South Dakota than almost other states combined. So it was really cool to see. It just kind of goes to show how great of a place South Dakota is for chasing birds. Some states haven't come out with their exact harvest estimates. I know North Dakota and Kansas have. And again, we're leading the nation by far and large on how our pheasant harvest is going. If you go back to recent trends, all those other states that actually have wild bird harvest, they don't even add up to the amount of birds that we harvest just alone in our state. So just again goes to show how cool and important and awesome the opportunity that we have in South Dakota to hunt pheasants. Excuse me. So you can see here, this is just a little graph. Again, we're, you know, this is the trend of non-resident licenses, resident licenses, and our harvest. So we're, again, the last couple of years, we've been seeing an increase in harvest, increase in license sales, which is always really good news as a pheasant biologist. It just shows that, you know, we're doing our job as a department, as well as promoting the habitat and access, so giving folks an opportunity to go out there and actually harvest these birds that we're producing in the state. So I'll jump into prairie grouse harvest now. Again, I'll remind you that last year was the first year that we had the season actually go to January 31st. We harvested almost 100,000 grouse last year, so we were up 42% from 2023, which is crazy. You know, granted, we did add a month to the season in the month of January, but a lot of those harvest estimates that came from January didn't really, I mean, they obviously showed an increase in harvest just because we're adding more days to the month of January, but it just goes to show that a lot of times grouse harvest happens in September and early October, and that's when majority of these grouse are actually harvested, and it just shows how many birds we actually had and how good of production we had the last year. So again, 100,000 birds. Last year was just over 60,000, so we actually increased our harvest by almost 40,000 birds in 1 year. So for our total prairie grouse hunters, we saw a spike in it. I'm sure people got word of, you know, good grouse numbers kind of in central and western South Dakota, whether it be our Upland Outlook or talking to landowners or just having that, having that desire to go out and chase this type of birds, to just under 20,000 grouse hunters, which is an 11% increase, which is awesome. Residents, we did see another 13.3% increase to just over 10,000 resident grouse hunters. And then again, we're a destination location when it comes to non-residents. We're one of those states that offers both the opportunity to shoot sharp-tail grouse and greater prairie chicken. So a lot of folks like to do kind of that dual harvest opportunity. So we see a fair number of non-residents, selecting central and western South Dakota for these opportunities. And we saw a 10% increase to just over 8,000 non-resident license holders. So again, here's a graph. You can see that large jump in 2024. The last 4 years, we've seen just kind of a steady incline in our harvest, incline in our license hunters. Really just goes to show that the habitat and access directive that we've had for our department is doing good work with rotational grazing, which grouse really love, and then also providing the access out there for these guys to go out there and chase these birds. So looking forward to the 2025 season, a lot of people are calling my office, what is the hatch like? What can we expect? I'm planning my trip for South Dakota. How are bird numbers? And I have to kind of temper their expectations a little bit. We consider our nesting and brood rearing season from mid-May to about August. So we're, just in this first week of June, so we're not quite through that whole nesting season yet, to get those chicks into the age where we can actually get them produced and then have them harvestable. However, things are looking really, really good. And a lot of times, as a pheasant biologist, when we're looking at differences from 1 year to the next when it comes to production, weather plays a major factor on how many birds are produced, how many hens come into the spring to be able to nest, as well as that brood survival. When we're talking about weather, when it comes to this interannual variation in abundance, so from 1 year to the next, overwinter hen survival is super important. If you have a very hard winter, reduced hen survival, you're actually having fewer hens coming into the nesting season that are available to reproduce with the leftover roosters that actually to initiate a nest. Obviously, the more hens you have, the more nests you'll have, and potentially the more broods you'll have on the landscape that'll be harvestable in fall. We also look at nest success. Usually cool, damp conditions can hamper nest success when it comes to on the landscape. However, nest success is fairly consistent through time. So it's a little less important than this overwinter hen survival. But the third component that we really look into in pheasant production is this brood survival. So what are the grassland conditions when these nests hatch? How are the forb conditions? Is there insect abundance for these chicks to go through and forage to gain the weight, and get the protein that they need to get to adulthood? So over and all, weather is a major factor that influences these type of parameters when we're talking about pheasant production. However, as a pheasant biologist, I have to remind people weather can play a major factor in this year-to-year abundances, but habitat is what produces the long-term trends. Pheasants aren't earthworms, pheasants and grouse, they're not earthworms, so they need grass to persist. They need grass to nest in. They need grass to provide food for them. They need grass to provide that brood cover to get their chicks to adult age. So even though weather can play a major role, habitat and idle grasslands such as CRP and good rotational grazing where we have good residual biomass on the landscape is what really plays a factor on their long-term population trends. So I'll get into a little bit of the biology side of things. We actually took this information from historic data that we had and looked at predominantly eastern South Dakota. What we did is we analyzed this data along with around 150 weather stations to be able to predict whether or not, or predict if weather had an influence on this interannual variation that we kind of hypothesized, as well as what the literature actually put in there. So when we talk about this type of data and what type of influence it has on production, we generally talk about three variables that really influence, hen production and chick survival. One of them is cumulative snowfall. In our state, cumulative snowfall from November to March is a very good predictor on whether or not we're going to be quote unquote better than last year for when it comes to production, having more abundance of pheasants on the landscape. As you can see here with this graph and the confidence intervals, the more snow that we get cumulative from November to March, the more impact it's going to have on pheasant abundance. If we have these mild winters in South Dakota, it leads to higher hen survival. Hens are in better condition when it comes to the nesting season, so they can produce more eggs or larger clutch sizes, and they can also nest earlier as well, which leads to increased chick survival when it comes to the fall. As everybody in South Dakota knows, this last year, South Dakota had a phenomenal mild winter. We had relatively no snow in much of the state. You can see in the bottom right-hand graph that most places had at the very most, 12 to 20 inches of snow, and on average in Huron, where I'm located, we're right at about 40 inches for a normal winter. So we were well below average for that snowfall. We witnessed awesome hen survival driving around this spring. There were plenty of hens and roosters just out showing or displaying, setting up breeding territories and that sort of thing. So the mild winter can certainly help us. However, there are some times where we get a lot of moisture from that snowfall. So it's not the only snowfall is not the only impact that we have on this. We do need other sources of moisture to kind of get that grass growing to offer good cover. This kind of transitions perfectly into precipitation. As I alluded to, precipitation will get that grass growing, get it to green up, provide that valuable nesting and brood rearing cover. With the variable that we, really rely on in South Dakota is this April to May precipitation. And we do have kind of a quadratic relationship when this comes to it. So we don't want too little of moisture, because obviously that kind of indicates that we're either going into a drought or we're not getting that grass to grow. But at the same time, we don't want too much. We don't want these nests to be cold and cool and damp, because it can affect nest success. So we want anywhere between that 4 to 6 inches for April, May precipitation. In order to initiate that cover, provide good nesting and brood rearing cover. And as you can see again in the bottom right hand corner, South Dakota is pretty much on par with that average precipitation. We've had really good timely rains. There in mid-May, I got a little nervous because we needed some rain, and then anywhere from 2 to 4 inches fell super slow, really absorbed in the ground, and then when we started getting these warmer temperatures, that grass really responded really, really well. The last variable that is super important to our interannual variation in pheasant production is the April and May temperature. As a pheasant biologist, when we think of cool spring temperatures, sometimes we associate that with either late snowfall or lots of rain. But again, that can kind of translate into variables that, or it can kind of translate into factors that might not initiate that grass growth for good cover. So when we see a higher average April, cumulative April and May temperature, generally that's when we see better effects on production from one year to the next. Again, the picture in the bottom right-hand corner, we had relatively normal temperatures throughout much of the state. So again, the grass is responding great, it's going very, very well. Oh, one more time, Chris. So I want to emphasize here that this information that I'm providing, it's not an end-all be-all, but it does give managers like myself a good idea of what to expect for the next year, help people plan trips, kind of help us see where our birds are sitting. You get these stochastic events such as flash flooding, hailstorms, all that sort of stuff. They can have small localized effects on the pheasant population, you know, to a minimum. But overall, those types of weather characteristics that I described before to you earlier, those are the major driving factors that we see for these influences on production. But again, I wouldn't be the proper pheasant biologist if I didn't say that quality habitat can mitigate a lot of these extreme weather events in areas where we even have in areas of the state where winter might be more harsh. If we can offer good quality winter habitat to allow these birds to, you know, seek thermal cover, not risk getting predated by going out there and having to forage for longer to stay warm, you know, we can really mitigate these effects on production for the next year, increase hen survival, get more hens onto the landscape, as well as offer a lot of good diverse mixes of grasses and things where areas might be, or some species might be less drought tolerant in a state that can be fairly droughty like South Dakota. If we put grass species out there that are more drought tolerant, we can offer that good, good cover for nesting, good cover for brood rearing habitat. But most importantly, just having a ton of idle grass out there, such as CRP, rested pastures, that sort of thing. That's what's going to have the biggest long-term influence on our bird numbers, throughout the future. So, like I kind of alluded to in our figures there that I had in the previous slide, South Dakota witnessed minimal snowfall, which for hen survival is absolutely awesome. Had a lot of hens come into the spring, very evident by driving around in the springtime. When I was doing let counts, there were pheasants everywhere. I had buddies text me, call me, say, "Oh man, I'm seeing a lot of birds. You know, we didn't shoot enough of them last fall." And they're kind of worried about that, and I kind of have to, you know, temper them down a little bit and say, you know, it'll be just fine. We also have had average rainfall to get that grass growing, average temps to get that grass growing. So in all honesty, Chris, go ahead. The stage is set. We're set for hopefully a very productive fall with, you know, hopefully good bird numbers. I do have to put out there that the brood nesting and brood rearing season again goes from May to August. So things can take a turn, whether it be drought impacts and things like that. But the spring that we've had so far in this early summer has really set the stage up for phenomenal cover, phenomenal nesting conditions, good insect growth for these chicks so far. We're cautiously optimistic that we're going to have a very good fall. And with that, I can take any questions.
Very good, Alex. I do have a question for you. In addition to the weather helping with increased pheasant numbers, how much does the number of predators going down affect that? I think about our nest predator program, and I recently had somebody ask me if I've heard anything about avian flu taking out some of the raptor birds and those numbers decreasing to help bring up pheasant numbers. Do either of those items play a role in our pheasant population increasing over the last couple of years?
Yeah, any time that you take predators off the landscape, you do offer the opportunity there for increased nest success. Predators are very reproductively sound, so they can fill in there. So trapping needs to be done kind of on a religious basis, on a local scale to really have a huge impact on pheasant production. But again, by taking predators out, you do offer the chance that nest success will increase, as well as brood survival and hen survival in the wintertime. We haven't had any documented avian flu in any wild pheasants in the state of South Dakota, so that type of disease hasn't had an impact on our population at all. However, again, if there are some localized effects with some of their avian predators, like hawks and things like that, having those birds not out there anymore, obviously they're not going to be chasing down and eating pheasants.
Thank you for that. Additional questions, comments for Alex? Secretary Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Alex, great presentation. I find it very interesting to see those correlations between all the things you mentioned there. Just really wanted to make a clear shout out to all the habitat staff that have contributed to these successful pheasant abundance numbers, but also the landowners and egg producers across the state that have set aside acres for wildlife management purposes. Their willingness to help us through rotational grazing and conservation programs has been phenomenal. We have a great conservation community here in South Dakota. Lots and lots of folks carry this, I would say, a land ethic that is second to none across the nation. And these numbers here and the stage that is set for the year that we hopefully will have, because we are super excited about a great, great year, has a lot to do with our egg producers and our landowners across South Dakota. So I just want to thank them.
Thank you for that, Secretary Roebling. With that, Alex, thank you again for another great presentation. You always keep us up to date, and we appreciate your work.
Thank you.
And with that, we're going to move